It's Saturday, the 5th of December, 2015. Happy birthday to Josh Smith. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Conclusion 23. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to become a sponsor of the podcast for the day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, and you can be exactly like Conclusion 23 and sponsor today's show. Always remembering, Moneyball.com.au is Australasia's only daily fantasy sports site, so if you are in Australia or New Zealand, make sure you're checking out Moneyball. Click the links on the website to join and join in all the contests over there, and hopefully win yourself some money for any of those. And some people have been asking how I do in my DFS lineups each day. I cashed in all my head-to-heads. No, I didn't play any head-to-heads. Sorry, I cashed in all the double ups today, all the cash games, and also in the GPP as well. So a pretty successful day in daily fantasy land for me. All right, let's go. There's games to talk about. There's injuries that happened. There's big performances that happened.
Let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night goes to none other than Anthony Davis. He was, I think he sent shockwaves through everybody once again by going down with an ankle injury. This guy goes down, it looks like that the world's ending, that he's in pain, and that's just the way he is. But he bounced back up, he played 46 minutes, he got the Pelicans over the line in an overtime victory, and we're always going to be panicking every time he goes down with an injury. It's just the way that it's going to be. Sometimes it'll be serious, sometimes it'll be fine. Today, it was fine. 31 and 12 for Davis. He hit two threes. He took four shots from three as well, which is interesting. 12 rebounds, an assist, four steals, a block. Big volume field goals, 13 of 22. The free throw is not so good. Three of six from there, only the one turnover. So a pretty good line, an excellent line from Anthony Davis yet again. And he's getting better and better. Over the last couple of weeks, he's a top three player. After struggling at the start of the season, the first couple of weeks of the season, he was outside the top 10, but he is coming on very, very strong now and getting those blocks back up to where they needed to be. And that was a big thing that was keeping his value down. He is now averaging over the last 2 weeks, two steals and three blocks a game on 0.7 threes, 27 and 13. There's some pretty impressive numbers from Anthony Davis. So everyone who took him number one, you're pretty pleased. You're clearly worried about the injuries that seem to keep happening to him, but the performance now is becoming more in line with what you were hoping when you drafted him. The waiver wire line of the night, Kent Bazemore of the Atlanta Hawks. Now, he's the waiver wire line of the night because he's been dropped in a lot of leagues, and that's rightfully so, but he was a fantastic performer. He had 25 minutes, 15 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, but the kicker here is 2 threes and 4 steals. It is clear that he is getting minutes behind Thabo Sefolosha. He doesn't look like he's taking that starting job back over. He's going to be stuck in these mid-20 range of minutes, but he's still being relatively productive. Not awesome, but relatively productive, I think, is the best way of putting it. And he's still, in the last 2 weeks, coming off the bench, playing 24 minutes, he's still ranked inside the top 120. And that's because he's getting 0.8 blocks, 1.5 steals, 1.2 threes, those sort of numbers. His shooting percentages have come way down, which we thought they would. He's down at 44 and 77 as opposed to 47 and 85, which he is over the course of the season. And this is more becoming in line with who he actually is as a player. But the defensive numbers, the three-pointers are still there. So if you're looking for those numbers, Bazemore definitely has value. But just don't expect the sort of crazy top 50 numbers that he was putting up to start the season, because it's unlikely that it was unlikely that he was going to keep up those sort of performances, and he's dropped off. But he's still playing a solid role for the Hawks, but the path for him to get minutes now is definitely a little bit more limited, with Thabo Sefolosha entrenching himself in that starting lineup and playing pretty well also. The young gun of the night, pretty much must just do this every day.
Porzingis.
Kristaps Porzingis. How good is this guy? It's amazing. He is that good, it's not funny. 26 minutes for Porzingis, 19 and 10, 3 threes, 2 blocks, insane percentages. And what was holding him back at the start of the season was his poor shooting. He was shooting like 41, 42%. He's acclimatized like no player I've ever really seen. He's shooting over the last 2 weeks, 49 and 89, 17 and 11, 1.5 threes, 3.7 blocks. It's out of this world. He's legit a top 10 player for the last 2 weeks. You keep thinking it's going to fall off and he's going to run into a wall, but maybe it doesn't. Could he be a top 20 player this year? Massive chance of it. Massive. He has been incredible. And if you're a Knicks fan, you should be rightfully over the moon with what Kristaps is doing, because he's been entertaining. He's been incredible to watch. He's picked up the game so well. Everything looks great now. If you can sell Kristaps Porzingis for a top 10 pick or a top 10 player, I'm okay with doing that. But I don't think he falls too far out of that top 40 range. I think that's probably absolute floor for him. We might see his shooting percentage drop back down, which is, again, something that really held him back. We've got him projected at the moment at 43% on Basketball Monster. I'm definitely going to have a look at that because, you know, as I said, over the last 16 games, he's shooting 46, and he started off the season shooting really poorly. So he's made that. Rookies shoot the ball poorly in general. They have a really bad field goal percentage, and it normally lasts them a season. But Porzingis, it lasted about a week. Like, his transition to become, yeah, I know what I'm doing, lasted about a week. And it's incredible. And congratulations to anybody who drafted him in a dynasty league. Just, is he the rookie of the year? I want to get your guys' take on it if you're watching along live or when you're listening to this later on. Is he the front runner for rookie of the year, or is it still Karl Anthony Towns? I would have to say, with the way that Towns is being treated in Minnesota, that Porzingis is probably favorite at the moment. But let me know your thoughts on whether you are on who you think is the current rookie of the year. Dud of the night, Jarrett Jack, Big Jarrett for the Brooklyn Nets. He played 24 minutes. He was not good. 5 points, 3 rebounds. 1 assist, 1 steal, and 1 3-pointer. He's been pretty good this season, so we can give him a little bit of a pass. He's ranked inside the top 75, averaging 13.5, 4, and 7 with a 3 and a steal. So they're pretty okay numbers, but not a good night here for him. He has tailed off a little bit over the last few games, and I said this at the start of the season a lot as well. I thought he was going to be a really decent fantasy player this year because he was going to get the minutes. But I maintained that he was just a terrible basketball player. And he is that terrible basketball player. And with Shane Larkin playing better, the minutes are coming down a bit for Jack. So Larkin's a guy that I'm okay with stashing in standard leagues because he's putting up top 100 value as it is. And if Jack continues to be who we thought he was, and that's no good, then he could start taking the minutes and taking the role off him. For now, you're not dropping Jack, and he still has to be owned everywhere. But the trend of what's happening in Brooklyn and with someone actually challenging him, he's not going to withstand. If someone, you know, challenges him with actual force and a good play, which Larkin can do or has done, then he's not good enough to withstand that Jarrett Jack. So that's something to watch out for, I think. The daily fantasy value play of the day goes to Drew Holiday of the New Orleans Pelicans. He priced at 4,800. He put up 50.36 points. Actually, that doesn't sound right. I want to look into that. I think my numbers are a bit wrong on that. But anyway, we'll leave that alone because something does not sound right on that at all. We'll leave that one out. I don't know where that came from. My apologies. Drew Holiday, he had a pretty good game, but I don't think he had 50 points. Someone can correct me on that if need be, because yeah, something just does not look right with that at all. Anyway, let's get into these games and talk about them now in a little bit more detail. I've got to bring it up now. The joys of live podcasting. There we go. Back in business. All right, the first game of the night was the Phoenix Suns and the Washington Wizards. A pretty weird game, this one. Tyson Chandler was out for the Suns, and the Wizards were without Marcin Gortat. They were without Nene. They were without Chris Humphreys. So they had no big men at all, basically. So the game anticipated it to go pretty small, and in the end, it did. The Suns started John Lua over Markieff Morris, and Lua started off on fire. He had 13 points in the first half, did not score after that, and was limited to just 23 minutes, while Markieff played 28 off the bench. Now, Markieff wasn't great, but he did get more minutes than John Lua, and that's because John Lua is not good. Markieff had a 10-4 with a block. I still maintain Markieff should be a top 100 player when all is said and done this year. Lua played the 23 minutes. I'm not looking at him in 12-team leagues if Morris is back. And Teletovic played just 7 minutes here in this game. So neither of those guys are must-own players. Alex Len got the start with Chandler out. He played just 15 minutes and went 6-4 with a couple of blocks. I just wish that he would get consistent big minutes, but it just doesn't appear the way that Hornacek is going to run things that he's going to be in line for that. Eric Bledsoe, 22-4-7. Brandon Knight, 19-5-5 with 4 threes and a steal and a block. So good numbers from those guys. And probably one of the more surprising ones here is the play of PJ Tucker, who played 37 minutes, 9 points, a 3 a steal, and 13 rebounds. This is the sort of play that made PJ Tucker a borderline top 100 player for the last couple of seasons. A shooting guard eligible player who could get big rebounds, who could hit a three, who could get steals. And he'd been absolutely putrid this season, but the minutes were right up here. TJ Warren's in like a mini slump, so he's not taking the minutes away from PJ Tucker. Not adding Tucker, but the value of Warren is what is sort of under scrutiny here, and it's really hard to own TJ Warren in 12-team leagues at the moment. His value is really tied to his points and field goal percentage, and if he's not getting enough minutes, then what's the point? I think that's probably the best way of phrasing it. On to the Wizards, and there we thought there'd be a lot of DFS value in this game, and there was a lot of value from a lot of players here. Brad Beal was fantastic, 34-9-5 with 5 threes and 2 steals, a red-hot night from him. And John Wall continued, yeah, he's sort of resurgent, 17-5-9 with a couple of threes and a couple of steals. And 2 threes from John Wall is big, and he's definitely upped his 3-point percent or 3-point output this season. Otto Porter had probably his best game in a while, 13-7, a steal and 2 blocks, while Gary Neal chimed in with 12-6 off the bench. The Wizards started a front court of Jared Dudley and Ryan Hollins. Yuck. Jared Dudley was yuck as well. He played just 23 minutes, which is the lowest he's played in the last few games. He missed all 7 of his field goal attempts, finishing with 3 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist, and 2 steals. A lot of people would have been going with Dudley in daily fantasy, and it would have hurt a lot. But I think it's just a case of just things not working out for him on one day. I imagine that he's not going to be losing the starting job to Ryan Hollins or DeJuan Blair or anything like that. He'll go back and play those 27 to 30 minutes and give us that low, back-end 14-team league value. I think that's probably about where Jared Dudley stands at this point. Ramon Sessions had 18 points in his 24 minutes as well. The next game to take a look at is the Battle of New York, the Brooklyn Nets and the New York Knicks. It was pretty much over very early on in this one. Brook Lopez was solid, 21-4 with a couple of blocks. Thad Young, 18-11. And Bojan Bogdanović came off the bench and went 7-7 with a 3-2 steals. But his minutes are so limited at the moment that it's hard to deal with him. Much like it's hard to deal with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who have seen his minutes reduce significantly. He played just 18 here, 2 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist. He was a guy that had tremendous value to add for steals and boards, but the minutes have been dropped precipitously. And the output's dropped as well. He probably doesn't need to be held on to. I mentioned Shane Larkin earlier. He played 23 minutes and went 6-2-3. He also had 3 steals, which is where his strength lies, and a block as well. He's a big steals guy. That's where he's going to get the bulk of his value. Thomas Robinson had a nice little cameo off the bench, 10-8 in 14 minutes, while Joe Johnson, 9-4-4. It's a pretty underwhelming performance from Joe Johnson. On to the Knicks. Carmelo Anthony, 28-7, 5 threes, 3 assists, 2 steals. This is a good game. We've been waiting for Melo to sort of bounce back and have a big one here, and he did. Aaron Aflalo, he had 18 points. That's a pretty good output from Aflalo. You'd be happy with that. A 3, 3 rebounds, 1 assist. Not a bad performance from Aaron Aflalo, and he's had a couple of decent performances lately. He's averaging, in fact, over 20 points a game in his last 3, but just remember that he's shooting 65% in those last 3, and he's not going to be that good a shooter. He's also shooting 48% on the season, and that's something I don't think is going to stick with him either. I'd expect that to regress a couple, and he's averaging 0.2 steals and 0.1 blocks. He's not a defensive guy. So, he probably, as much as I'm anti Aaron Aflalo, he probably has a spot in 12-team leagues, but he's the worst player in a 12-team league. And if you think he's going to keep up the form that he's putting up at the moment, I think you're going to be in for a pretty rude awakening, because I can't. There's zero chance, absolutely zero chance that he is a 65% shooter moving forward. Zero. He's more likely to be a 65% shooter from the free throw line than he is from the field. So the 20.5 points, 6 rebounds is not going to continue. That's where his value is coming from, that big points total and the big field goals. Because less than 2 assists, the steals, blocks are non-existent and giving you 1.33s, which is okay, but it's not all that exciting. So it's working for him now, definitely. But I imagine a drop-off will come pretty soon. Robin Lopez got his minutes back up to 30 here, 7-5 with 3 blocks. He's not a must-own player, though, because the minutes are just such in flux for him. And when he plays 30, that's good. 7-5 with 3 blocks is useful. but it's just happening so infrequently. Jose Calderon registered 1 point. That's not ideal, but 4 rebounds, 10 assists, 2 steals. You're relatively happy with that sort of output. The bench unit, there's not much to really talk about there. Jerian Grant played 18 minutes. Langston Galloway played 20. So Langston Galloway no longer has any 12-team value if you hadn't cottoned on to that fact already. The next game, the Milwaukee Bucks. Ah, that tricky Jason Kidd. What did he do here? Where was Tyler Ennis? Starting point guard. Ennis didn't play in this one after being the starter in the last game, and Bayless moved into the starting lineup, back into the starting lineup. Ennis was bothered by a sore shoulder. Bayless went down with a twisted ankle in this one. Greves Vasquez is already out with an ankle injury. So going from having 4 point guards, Kidd has now got 1, and that is Michael Carter-Williams. Now, Carter-Williams played 27 minutes here, 6, 7, and 5, so not an overwhelmingly good line, but I'd still make sure I'm owning Carter-Williams in pretty much all standard leagues. He's been close to 30 minutes in, I think, 3 of the last 4 games since being demoted, and I imagine that trend is going to continue. Greg Monroe had a nice game, 14 and 13 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. And John Henson chimed in 8-3 with 3 blocks in his standard 15 minutes. Good line, low minutes. Chris Middleton went 21-5-3, and Giannis Antetokounmpo went 12-9-2 with a block. And OJ Mayo played 34 minutes in the start and went 13-5-4. Mayo's getting consistent minutes. He's putting up decent numbers. He's probably not a 12-team league ad, I wouldn't have thought, but the minutes are there. He's producing sort of solid numbers. You can't completely ignore him. Rashad Vaughn got a little bit of extra run in this game. He did nothing with it. Played 11 minutes for 0 points. You'd think he'd get some sort of run in Saturday's action with Bayless and Vasquez and Ennis. You know, big chance that all 3 of those guys are out. So extra guards are going to have to play some extra minutes. On the Pistons side of things, Reggie Jackson went 23-5. Andre Drummond went 17-23 with 3 steals and 2 blocks, while Marcus Morris chimed in with 23-4-3. And Morris had a bit of a flat spot, but he's picked it back up lately. And someone tweeted me today that Marcus Morris was on their waiver wire. He needs to be owned in all leagues. The minutes are still pretty high. Stanley Johnson got 23 off the bench. Ersan Ilyasova played 25 for 13-8. And Anthony Tolliver played 23. And all those guys seem to cannibalize each other's minutes. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope played 33, and he just stunk. He's 6 of 6 from the line. That's pretty good. But 1 of 6 from the field for 8 points. He's been really struggling. He's a back-end 12-team league guy, probably at best at the moment. That's the best way that I can describe what Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is doing at the moment. The Los Angeles Lakers and the Atlanta Hawks are up next. Lou Williams, after his 7-steal game, chimed in with another 31 minutes. Nick Young, not seen at all. 18 points for Williams, 3 threes, 2 assists, 1 steal, and 1 block. And this is the sort of role that I envisaged Williams having at the start of the season and thought, yeah, he'd be a nice back-end 12-team league guy. It didn't work out that way, but it's starting to work out that way now, so you can start to consider Lou Williams. Jordan Clarkson inexplicably played 29 minutes only, despite being by far and away the best player on this team. 13-3-2 with 3 threes. He's shooting at such a high efficiency. He's really good. The only thing holding him back is a certain coach and a certain shooting guard. And that shooting guard is Kobe Bryant, who played 35 minutes here and put up a really good fantasy line. 14 points, 2 threes, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. That's awesome. 4 of 19 is not all that good as a shooting percentage, 21%. And I'll say it again, you can't deal with him in a roto league, but in the head-to-head league, punting field goal percentage, he's close to a top 50 player. Because he's dominating the ball, which he shouldn't be, and he's putting up big numbers, and they're coming in different categories. You have to ride it out. D'Angelo Russell had a pretty decent game as well. 16 points, 10 boards, 4 threes and 4 assists. He played 36 minutes, so obviously he's a must-own back-end guy now. And Julius Randle, probably is an odd game from Julius Randle, 8-5, and normally he thrives in points and rebounds, but he added 3 steals and a block, which is a rarity, and then he also went 3 of 12 from the field, so he's going to be up and down, no doubt, but he's still worth owning as a back-end guy. Onto the Atlanta Hawks, Paul Millsap, 15-8 with 2 steals and 2 blocks, while Al Horford went 16-9-5 with a 1-1. That's pretty stock standard for all those guys. Kyle Korver chimed in with 3 blocks. Weird. Thabo, let's go into him here. He played 32 minutes, 8-5 for Thabo, a steal, a block, and 2 threes. And that's useful for your sort of deep 12-team leagues and 14-team leagues. He's been just doing just a little bit of everything, really, just enough to keep himself in consideration for those leagues. He's a top 75 player this year, only averaging 7.6 points. So if you're punting points, he's got tremendous value. 0.8 threes, 5 rebounds, 1.6 steals, 0.7 blocks, 52% from the field, doesn't turn the ball over. He's got tremendous value, but it has to be the right sort of team for Thabo. Mike Scott also chimed in with 14 off the bench, and this is your daily reminder that Dennis Schroeder is not able to be owned in 12-team leagues, 6-5 in 17 minutes. The next game, the Houston Rockets and the Dallas Mavericks. Trevor Ariza had one of his better games of the season, 18-6 with 4 threes and 4 steals, while James Harden went 25-8-9 with a steal and 2 blocks. And Pat Beverley, he showed us again why he should be owned everywhere. 14-3-1, 4 threes and 2 steals. He's really cranking it up with the threes and steals, giving some scoring, and clearly outplaying Ty Lawson, who played 20 minutes for 8 points here. Clint Capela and Terrence Jones were the starters. Capela missed all 5 of his field goal attempts. He still gave us nice performance with 10 boards, a steal, and 2 blocks. But with Dwight Howard coming back in the next game, what does Bickerstaff do? Does he go back to Terrence Jones, who went 17-9 here in 32 minutes? Or does he keep going with Clint Capela? It's going to be interesting to see. I still think that Capela should be owned. And you probably want to look at picking Jones back up because he's had 2 strong games in a row. And I'll reiterate again, if you haven't heard me speak about Jones, I don't think he's a good basketball player, but when he gets minutes, he is a good fantasy producer. So as long as the minutes are there for him, he's worth owning, and that's something we just have to pay attention to. On to the Mavericks side of things, Darren Williams continues his good season, 22.6 assists, 4 threes and 2 steals. Dirk went 16-10 with a couple of steals, and Zaza Pachulia grabbed himself another 11 rebounds. Those guys have all been pretty solid with what they've been doing. The Mavericks decided to put Chandler Parsons on the bench in this one. They played him 27 off the bench, and the news came out about Parsons today or yesterday that he thinks he'll be ready to go full steam ahead by January. So he's still got a few more weeks of pain, but the minutes are pushing up, and if he's getting 27 minutes a game, he's going to be able to produce decent value. Now, 9-4-4 is not great, but it's okay, and the minutes are encouraging. Ray Felton played 34 minutes in this one, 9-3-5 with 2 steals and a block. He's a low-end option at best, while Dwight Powell had 11-6 with a block in his 16 minutes. But the times of him being a relevant 12-team league player for the moment are pretty much over. The last game of the night is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the New Orleans Pelicans. LeBron went 37-7-8 with a triple one. That's a big, big night from him, especially going 10 of 11 from the free throw line. J.R. Smith nailed 6 threes for 18 points. And Matthew Dellavedova entered the starting lineup in place of Mo Williams. Dellavedova played 42 minutes. Mo Williams played 23. Dellavedova went 8-2-4 with a steal and 2 threes, and he's been getting big minutes the last week or so. I don't mind adding him in 12-team leagues because he has been able to get pretty decent assist numbers, and if he's playing 40 minutes or 35 minutes, you're going to get some threes, you're going to get some points, you're going to get some assists. I don't mind adding him short-term, definitely short-term. Kevin Love, 15-10. Tristan Thompson, 10 boards in 32 minutes. And Timofey Mozgov, just the paltry 17 minutes. And again, much like Dennis Schroeder, this is your daily reminder, do not own Timofey Mozgov in standard leagues. Mo Williams, if you're owning him, you're just holding, but it didn't look promising for him to get only 23 minutes, 8 points and 3 assists. There was a big chance that he was going to drop out of relevancy once Kyrie returned. I didn't really think it would happen with Dellavedova taking his role, though. So that is something we need to watch out for. It was good to see that Eric Gordon did stick in the starting lineup here. He played 31 minutes, and Drew Holiday came off the bench and played his 25. So, see, Alvin Gentry, you can actually work these guys to play the correct role. Who knew? Gordon went 19-1-2 with 4 threes. Drew Holiday, 13-7-5 with a couple of steals. And Ryan Anderson chimed in with 18 points off the bench, while Tyreek went 14-7-10. And he's basically just as good as new. I don't like Omer Asik playing 25 minutes. That makes me sad, especially because Alexey Zhinsa is not playing. And Ish Smith completely out of the rotation, just so we can get another sub-30% field goal shooting night from Norris Cole, who went 4 points on 2 of 7 shooting. That is pretty much every game that Norris Cole is shooting under 30%. He's just not good. He's terrible. He's terrible, and he shouldn't be getting backup point guard minutes. Tyreek, Drew Holiday, Eric Gordon, Ish Smith. There's enough ball handlers there. We don't need Norris Cole's brand of chuckery to infect this team, but a good win by the Pelicans in the end. All right, that is it for today's portion of the recap for Saturday. Time for a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk DFS for Saturday. I saw ya. We'll be right back. All right, we are back, and NBA schedule, I've said it a million times, it's been weird, very weird this week. We've got 10 games on a Saturday after 6 on a Friday, bit of a back-to-front sort of schedule here, but hey, it is what it is. Reminder, there is a couple of early games, so check your daily fantasy provider as to which games are actually included in which tournaments and cash games and all that sort of stuff, because there are some early games that might not be included. We're going to obviously cover all of the games here, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to use them all in all of your tournaments. The first game up is the Denver Nuggets and the Philadelphia 76ers. That is one of the early games. The Nuggets are favored by 2.5. We have a total of 194.5. There is no Jahlil Okafor. He's still suspended by the Sixers. We don't think we're going to get Gary Harris, who's still dealing with those concussion issues. Danilo Gallinari is dealing with a knee sprain. A knee strain. He looks like he'll be ready to go. Kenneth Faried's missed the last couple with an ankle problem. You'd think that against the Sixers, he might not get out there. So that means that we're all on Darrell Arthur DFS watch. And Rashawn Holmes suffered a sprained ankle in practice, but he looks like he'll be ready to go. Also, I know that so many of you are anxiously awaiting the return of your fantasy savior, Tony Roten. He is coming back in this game. He's going to be playing on a 12 to 14 minute limit. I'm not adding him anywhere at all. There's two reasons. He is a horrible player to watch. There's as many reasons as I can think of. He's a horrible player to watch. He is inefficient. He hurts multiple categories negatively and need to be set up the correct way. And he's not good because they've got other guys who can play the position. Isaiah Cannon. Isaiah Cannon's not good, but he's providing a pretty solid role for this team. He's a knockdown shooter. He's helping space the floor. There's TJ McConnell as well. And then there's going to be the return of Kendall Marshall also. So I don't see a situation, and Tony Roten needs 27 minutes plus to be useful in fantasy. I can't see him getting 27 minutes, coming off an ACL injury and being shit. Two things that are working against him. If you've got him in an IR spot, you keep him there. But if you don't and you've been stashing him, to me, it's the wrong move. I could be completely wrong on Tony Roten. Pretty confident I'm not. Just watch him play. Just watch a game that he plays and think, is this guy an NBA-level player, even on the Sixers? And even on the Sixers, to me, he is not an NBA-level player. It's my daily Tony Roten rant. Nerlens Noel at 6,000 is interesting. He's been really bad, but you'd think that without Okafor, maybe this is a chance for him to have a breakout. Now, the Nuggets are not the toughest team, clearly. At 6,000, what can he put up? Can he give you 30 points? Yeah, there's a chance of that. It's probably only tournaments, but it's not ideal. Randy Foy is another tournament-only option. At 3,600, he could play 30 minutes or so if Gary Harris is out, so we look to him. And obviously, Will Barton is the other player there, but he's at 5,600. If he gives you 30 points, which he's possible of doing as well, there's some value in using him. Emmanuel Mudiay is priced nicely. It's a nice matchup for him at 5,600 against the Sixers, but he's been really, really bad. If there's a team that's going to allow him to get back in action, maybe it's this one. I talked about Arthur. He's a guy we look at if Faried is out. Joffrey Lavernier, you would think, would start. At 4,100, he's worth plugging in a lot of situations. That means we don't want much exposure to Nikola Jokic, who played just 13 minutes off the bench in the last game. Jeremy Grant's another one who should have a pretty decent outing. He's averaging 29 across his last three. He's priced at 5,000, but you would think that he's a 27 to 30 minute a night guy with Okafor out. Now, Isaiah Cannon at 5,100, he has cooled off a little bit in his daily fantasy output, only averaging 23 across the last few games. Not ideal. And Robert Covington's up to 6,800. That's making it a little bit harder to use him. He obviously started out awesomely, and the Nuggets aren't an awesome defensive team, so you can use him. But the last three games, he's averaging under 30 a game. And he needs to be averaging over that at 6,800. So you use him, but don't think, yeah, this is a guaranteed knockdown sort of situation where I'm going to get big numbers and big minutes out of, or you're going to get big minutes, but you're not necessarily going to get big numbers to repay that salary with Bob Cove. The next game is the Golden State Warriors and the Toronto Raptors. Big chance for the Raptors here, I think. The Warriors obviously are going to be wanting to keep cruising. They're on the road trip. They're up against a really good team. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I like Corey Joseph here at 4,500. The opposition point guards do put up above average fantasy points against the Warriors. He's only at 4,500. He's averaging almost 23 across the last three. The minutes have been back up there. I think that he's a decent play. Bismack Biyombo is still at 3,900. And yes, he's been cut into by Lucas Nogueira, but he's still averaging 16.9. He still put up 16.4 in 25 minutes in the last game. And at 3,900, that's plenty. If he gives you 20, 20 points, 20 fantasy points, on 10 rebounds and 2 blocks, I think you're pretty okay with that. Just don't rely on him to get those 35 minutes that he was getting. Luis Scola is strictly a tournament play, even though he's 4,200. His minutes have been reduced, averaging just 20 across the last three. Kyle Lowry at 8,800. He's had a remarkably good season. He's averaging over 40. I'm okay with using him here, even though he's going up against Steph. And we saw what happened to Kemba Walker in the last game when he went up against Steph Curry. He was the dud of the night after that matchup. I like Klay Thompson at 5,900. I think that he is starting to look better. He's starting to look like he is on the way back. That the Raptors aren't a great matchup for shooting guards, but at that price, Klay is a pretty solid guy to use. And DeMar DeRozan, the Warriors are actually good. Backcourt guys against the Warriors can get some points. So DeMar DeRozan put up almost 48 in the last one. He is priced at 7,700, so it is not easy to use him, but he can be considered. Steph Curry is now at 11,100. And for as well as he's played, he's only averaging 42 across the last three. He's averaging 46 across the last five. He's going up against Kyle Lowry. I reckon I'll leave him alone. It's so hard to do, but I reckon at that price, I will leave Steph Curry alone. I will probably be made to pay for it, but I'm not keen on him at that price. 8,100 for Draymond Green. I'm also not keen on him at that price. He's averaging 40 across the last three, which is probably enough for that price, but not sure that this is going to be a great situation, or not sure it's going to be an opportunity for him to put up big numbers. He struggled a little bit in the last one. I don't hate it. I probably like using Draymond more than I like using Steph, but it's not standing out to me as something that I need to get involved with heavily. The Cavs and the Heat is up next. Always a lot of interesting dynamics in this one. The Heat are favored by 2. The total is a very low 191. I would be shocked if we saw Luol Deng play. Some of the quotes coming out about him saying, he doesn't want to push it. He needs to make sure it's exactly right before he's ready to go. Doesn't inspire with me a huge amount of confidence that he plays. And that means that Gerald Green becomes a player that we consider. He's a low salary guy. He was terrible in the last game. You'd think that he'd be a bit better than that, but at 3,600, he's worth a go. LeBron at 10,000. Yeah, it's not bad. He's a real solid, 4.5 times value guy. And that can be useful if you've got a lot of low price guys around you. And he goes two ways. He's going up against the Heat, his former team, his mates. He's either going to shit the bed and he's going to have a terrible game, or he's going to go balls out. He's not going to go in between. So as steady as he's been, I reckon he just goes crazy or he goes terrible. So look at choose your spots there with LeBron. Justice Winslow at 3,800. He's really cheap. He's doing absolutely nothing. So I don't think I'd play him unless you think for some reason he's going to get things happening. This is not a good matchup for any of these guys, really. Dwayne Wade at 7,200. There's a chance that he goes ham on LeBron and puts up some big numbers, so we can consider him. He is averaging 36 across his last three, and at 7,200, that is worth it. And if you take the LeBron motivation into it, I think that you can get some value out of Wade. And same goes for Chris Bosh, who's averaging over 35 in the last three. He's priced at just under 8,000. So there is something to be said for using Chris Bosh in this matchup. For a game that wasn't very fantasy-friendly, let's move on to one that is pretty fantasy-friendly, the Sacramento Kings and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are favored by 2.5. The total here is 219. That is a full 28 points higher than the total of the Cavs and the Heat. That is big. Injury-wise, Dwight Howard should be back. He missed the last game due to rest. Not should be back. He will be back. Montrezl Harrell suffered a smack in the face, and he didn't return to the game on Friday. We don't know his status. Rajon Rondo could be facing a suspension. It seems unlikely at this point. And Donatas Motiejunas has been upgraded to questionable. He's missed all the season with a back issue, which has lasted just a massive amount of time. He's going to be real rusty if he plays. But if he plays and gets 10 minutes, it comes off Terrence Jones. It comes off Clint Capella. So that limits those guys a little bit. Now, Capella at 4,700, even though he missed all of his shots today, he still put up 22 daily fantasy points. And at 4,700, you're okay with that. That's pretty okay. And this is a situation here where I think that he is worth looking at. Omri Caspi is going to start for the Kings. He's back from a case of gastro. He's at 4,200. He's been putting up pretty good numbers for most of the year, especially when he gets extended run. I'm loving Omri Caspi. Yeah, he could go out and be terrible, but at 4,200, it's not going to destroy your team. Pat Beverley at 3,900 has been really solid as well. I think he's a guy that we look at in a lot of lineups. And if we're looking to spend big money, I think DeMarcus Cousins at 10,300 is a huge chance to put up 50. Like a massive, massive chance here. I think that he could go huge. Rudy Gay I like at 7,000 as well. And Costa Kufos coming off the bench at 4,600. Just because he's coming off the bench doesn't mean he's going to be ineffective. He could be a 22, 23 point scorer, and that could be useful. I also like James Harden in this one at 10,800. He's averaging almost 50 across the last three. He's averaging over 50 in his last five. He's had a 64-point game in those last four games. There's always a chance that he goes off, and you're going up against the Kings. So, yeah, there's a chance that he could put up some decent numbers. Wouldn't be chasing Trevor Ariza, who put a 34-point game up today. Doubt he does that. And Rajon Rondo at 8,000. His output has been way down at 23 points in the last three. No, thanks. As good as the Houston matchup seems, Pat Beverley is definitely a new part of the equation. So I don't think I'm going to be going Rajon Rondo. And the same situation goes for Darren Collison. The next game is the Portland Trailblazers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Wolves are favored by 2. The total is 203 in this game. Myers Leonard, he might still stay on the bench. We don't know. He's worth having a look at 4,600. I would probably look elsewhere, but he's interesting. Gorgui Dieng at 4,600. He's been getting 27 minutes a game over his last five, averaging 28 fantasy points. I think at 4,600, if Sam Mitchell's going to continue to give him the run that he deserves, awesome option. 3,900 for Nemanja Bjelica as well. Wing players and big players against the Blazers get a bump. So Bjelica's been struggling a bit, but at 3,900, could he put up 20 points? I reckon this is a chance for him to do it. And Karl Anthony Towns at 6,600, you're banking on him getting 30 minutes for him to be useful, and it could happen, but who knows what Mitchell's going to do, and that's the problem with using a guy like Karl Anthony Towns. Damian Lillard at 9,500, it's pretty expensive. I would rather spend the 10,000 and use Harden and use Cousins. Andrew Wiggins at 7,400 just doesn't do enough for me. Yeah, 30 points doesn't cut it, and that's what he's averaging across the last few. It's just not enough at that salary. And CJ McCollum is not, or hasn't been, a great DFS option of late, averaging 29.5 at 7,000 almost. He needs to do more. He needs to be 30. Look, he put up 35 in the last game, and he needs to do that. I'm not using Ricky Rubio at this point until his minutes get back up there. Zach LaVine is a solid play, though, at 5,800. I think you can use him in a lot of different situations. And Alan Crabb is not a bad tournament play. He's 3,600. He's been getting pretty hot with his shooting. And if he gets hot and stays hot, he's going to get extra minutes. So he's someone that you can pay attention to, I think. The Charlotte Hornets and the Chicago Bulls are up next. The Bulls are favored by 6. The total is 195.5. We need to check on Nikola Mirotic's status. He is dealing with a concussion. We don't know if he's likely to play. I would say if I'm leaning one way, I'm going to say no to Nikola Mirotic. So Joakim Noah at 4,400 is a really good option here. He would likely get the start and play 30 minutes if Mirotic was out. And at 4,400, you could get 28, 30 points off him. I think that he becomes a really awesome guy to look at. The center position in Charlotte is a concern. Frank Kaminsky got the minutes in the last game. Cody Zeller got the start. Who do you put the money on? Zeller's at 3,500. Kaminsky's at 36. Set up a tournament with both of them, because it could be a situation against the Bulls where they can put up decent numbers. Marvin Williams at 4,900 is also, I think, in a pretty decent spot here. He doesn't need to do much at that sub 5,000 salary, and I think that he's in a position where he could do something. Kemba Walker at 7,700. Bulls are allowing point guards to put up big numbers. He was terrible in the last game. You would hope that he would look to bounce back there, so there's a little bit of value in him. Jimmy Butler, he's just underwhelming at the moment, and Derrick Rose's shot is not working for him, so both of those guys I would leave alone. Nick Batum is now at 7,100. I don't mind it. He's averaging 36 across the last five. It's a solid matchup against the Bulls. I think that you can use Nick Batum in certain situations. The next game is the Milwaukee Bucks and the New York Knicks. The Bucks are favored by 1.5, and the total is a pretty low one, 190.5. We need to check the point guards for the Bucks. Gervis Vasquez with the ankle, Tyler Ennis with the shoulder, and Jared Bayless with the ankle as well. That could lead to a lot more minutes for Carter Williams, OJ Mayo, and Rashad Vaughn. Now, OJ Mayo's at 3,700. He put up 25 in the last game. He is one of the better players of the day, in my opinion. It could go horribly wrong, but everything points towards him being decent. And Michael Carter-Williams at 5,500, he's averaging 27 across his last three, and he could find himself getting 32 or 33 minutes. So he's worth paying attention to. I think Mallow at 8,300 had a bounce back game. The Bucks do allow big points to small forwards, so I think we can definitely have a look at Mallow there. And what about... He is at 7,300. I still love it. I still love him at 7,300. He's averaging 38 across his last three. I don't see Greg Munro shutting him down. He's been awesome. I would use him. 6,700 for Giannis Antetokounmpo. No thanks. Kidd is just too up in the air with what he does. And 7,500 for Munro. I can sort of get behind that. That price has come down enough where I can sort of start to use Greg Munro, but there's always going to be concern with what Jason Kidd does. Jabari Parker, we're not using him off the bench. I think that's probably about it for this game. The Boston Celtics and the San Antonio Spurs is the next one. This is not looking like an overly friendly fantasy matchup. The Spurs are favored by 8.5, and the total is a very lowly 188.5. Danny Green is down to 3,800. Do you dare risk it? Oh, I'm tempted. I'm real tempted. He put up 5 in the last game. That's bad. But he's at 3,800. The Celtics don't shut down opposition shooting guards that well. It's 3,800. I'm tempted for a tournament. Isaiah Thomas at 7,600 I think is in a good spot. And Kawhi Leonard at 8,900 has been on fire. I would be happy using both of those guys here. Jared Sullinger is always a risk because of Brad Stevens. He's at 5,900 though, so that's not that expensive. And we know that he can put up big numbers. And Kelly Olynyk at 3,900 is a guy that does have 40-point upside if he gets an opportunity. So that means he's only a tournament play, but if he hits, he can hit pretty big. LaMarcus Aldridge's salary has come down. It's down to 7,200, but it's still not low enough for me to look at. Tony Parker at 56. I reckon he's okay at 56. He's been putting up some decent numbers. Now, point guards don't fare well against the Celtics generally, but Parker's been in a pretty hot spot, as has Avery Bradley at 6,000. And the Spurs aren't good against shooting guards. Both those guys are on hot streaks. So their salaries aren't too expensive. I'm okay with having a look at them, but just be aware that the actual matchup doesn't suit them very well. And RIP Jay Crowder and Evan Turner having to have Kawhi Leonard guard you. That is not an ideal scenario. The Indiana Pacers and the Utah Jazz are up next. The Pacers are favored by 1.5. The total is 195.5. Monte Ellis is dealing with a shoulder issue, so we don't know if he's going to play. If he is out, Rodney Stuckey gets the boost there at 4,900. He's been really solid over the last three games. He is the guy that you want to grab. Rod Hood is down to 4,600. He's been struggling, but I think this is an opportunity for him to get back on the board. And Trevor Booker was terrible in his first start. He's at 3,800 though, so unless we hear something different of him not starting, then he's definitely going to be worth looking at. But the Pacers do have an ability to go small, obviously, with Paul George. So do the Jazz counter that and go Hayward at the 4? And that might limit Booker's minutes. So I don't think I'd want him in cash games. You might want to get some exposure in a tournament. But just be aware that the Jazz have been going with this basically all-wing lineup with Hayward, Hood, Burks, and that might not allow Booker to get on the court. Derek Favors at 7,900 is solid. Alec Burks at 56 is also pretty good. And Paul George is now down under 10,000. So at 9,700, Paul George is averaging 41. He had a stinker in the last game. I reckon he's going to bounce back with a pretty decent performance. And when we look at all these, you know, defensive performances of the Jazz guys, Rudy Gobert's not there, so it doesn't hold true as much. So I think George Hill can have a better game. I think Paul George can have a better game. So all of these guys, it needs to be taken into consideration when you're having a look at it. The last game of the night is the Orlando Magic, the red hot Orlando Magic, and the Los Angeles Clippers. Now, the Clippers are without Chris Paul. They're going to be likely without JJ Redick. So enter Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers. Crawford is at 4,200. He put up 24 in the last game, and Austin Rivers is at 3,500. He put up 11 in 35 minutes, but it's important that he got 35 minutes. The Magic do allow point guards to get big minutes, and Austin Rivers is barely a point guard's asshole, but there's an opportunity for him at minimum salary in a tournament. So you can have a look at him in certain situations. It's been really hard to rely on Magic players, but I'm getting in on Nick Vucevic here. 7,300 for him. He's been really rock solid lately. Skiles could Skiles him at any time, but I think that this is a good opportunity for Vucevic. He's averaging 35 across the last three. I'm looking at getting involved with him. Blake Griffin at 9,100 is going to have to carry the offense a little bit more. Some more assists for him. It's an easier matchup for him. I think that he is in a pretty decent spot here. And Lord Alfred Payton without Chris Paul on him at 6,500. There's the risk that associated with Scott Skiles, but I think that Lord Alfred is in a nice spot, as is Toby Harris, who's been pretty rock solid, played 40 minutes in the last game, and I don't think that he's in much danger. Victor Oladipo is still at 7,400. He's averaging 33, but the minutes, they do cap his ability to put up numbers to a degree. He's been putting up great numbers, but they could be even better if he was getting 30 minutes a night. It's hard to rely on Victor Oladipo at this point. All right, let's have a look at the plays for the day for tomorrow. Point guard, Corey Joseph, 4,500. Michael Carter-Williams, 5,500. And Isaiah Thomas at 7,600. Shooting guards, we've got OJ Mayo at 37, Klay Thompson at 5,900, and James Harden at 10,800. Small forwards, Omri Caspi, 4,200. Rudy Gay at 7,000, and Kawhi Leonard at 8,900. While power forwards, we go Marvin Williams, 4,900. Kristaps Porzingis, 7,300. Blake Griffin, 9,100. And finally, the centers, Gorgui Dieng, 4,600. Nick Vucevic, 7,300. And DeMarcus Cousins, 10,300. Guys, that is it. We are done. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Make sure you're checking out basketballmonster.com, hardwoodparoxysm.com, and of course, moneyball.com.au. That's it. We're done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.